as I say, the Federation became responsible for the response to the worldwide events, which really evoked intense emotional responses on the part of American Jews. Okay. As the Federation executed these responsibilities, they grew, as federations grew, and they attracted effective persons with substantial resources. And they also began to attract individuals who had very strong philosophical feelings about many aspects of Jewish life. And the result was that Federation began to expand the areas of interest and concern. It was no longer restricted to fundraising and to budgeting, and for that matter even to making funds available only to agencies which were carrying out social welfare activities. It became, in other words, the center or the most important institution, or put differently, the most dynamic Jewish institution, the most dynamic institution in Jewish life. As a result, and I guess I'm repeating myself here, more and more people gravitated to Federation. Federation kept expanding in terms of its resources, and kept expanding in terms of the areas of interest which it encompassed. And it began to move in the direction of accepting responsibility for activities connected with Jewish continuity. It began to deal more and more with Jewish education. It began to have relationships with synagogues. It began to see itself as being the center of Jewish life, and central address, some people call it, but the center of Jewish life, and important enough so that, as I say, the Jewish continuity became a responsibility for it. And today, there's really practically nothing that Federation would not be involved in connection with Jewish life, and for that matter, to some extent, in connection with interaction with non-Jewish elements. And it's, I think, an extraordinary development, and one which remains to be evaluated, perhaps, not philosophically, but by what the state of the Jewish community is 10 or 15 or 20 years from now. One of the most encouraging aspects, I think, has been, at least in Pittsburgh, the rapprochement, I guess that's as good a word as any, between the synagogues on the one hand and the Federation on the other. It would have been very easy to continue the really wide gulf that existed between synagogues and the Federation, but in Pittsburgh at least, that gulf has been narrowed. In fact, I guess there is no no gap any longer, at least in terms of working together. And Federation of Synagogues are joined in common endeavors. But the communal apparatus is of tremendous importance. I'll finish by making this last comment. Irving Howe, you know from Irving Howe? Wrote the way, what did he call
it? The World of Our Fathers.
The World of Our Fathers. Since that time, it's been, you know, he's written a lot of other stuff, of course, too, but that was the one which, in the Jewish community at least, built up his reputation, not that he needed it. He's been an intellectual for many years. He's a very bad speaker, by the way, rather extraordinarily. Came to Pittsburgh here because there was some talk about him becoming director of Jewish program, the director of the Jewish studies program at Pitt once. Wasn't a speaker. Anyway, he was invited either last year or 2 years ago to address the graduation ceremonies of the relatively new Reconstructionist College of Rabbis. And his comments were very striking, very unusual, and in a certain peculiar way relevant to what I'm saying here. He said he happens to be a secular Jew, and therefore he really had nothing to say to this group which had invited him, nothing useful to say to this group which had invited him to speak to them. As a secular Jew, he said, he really couldn't promote religion as being an answer to Jewish continuity, which, by the way, for which he has some feeling. He says he's struck by the he's struck by the expansion of the communal apparatus, and very striking to him. But he wonders whether this 10, 15, 20 years from now will have proved to be enough. He recognizes the importance of consciousness-wise of Israel and for that matter of the Holocaust, but 20 years from now and a new generation will those still have the same kind of impact that they do now. He wondered. But he had no message. It was very odd.
Well, that ties up your thoughts on changes in Federation.
Well,
is that right?
I
think we'd better save, you know, if you have more, but until another session, you were very generous to spill over. So we just didn't want to interrupt you in the middle.
I am struck. I just don't have to go on the paper. It is interesting to me to see not only the fact that the federations have expanded as well as they have, as much as they have, but the acceptance of it. I don't know anybody who questions it. Now, maybe they do. Maybe outside. Don't forget, I don't really have any way of interacting with. I shouldn't say I don't have any way. I have a way, perhaps, but I don't interact with lay people. Haven't either for a long time now on what their thoughts are about what's happening to Federation. It's obvious that Federation has great acceptance, and that to me it's obvious that Federation has great acceptance and that its image is a very sturdy one at the moment. But whether they're in the lay community, not just in Pittsburgh, I'm not talking now about Pittsburgh, I'm talking about around the country. Talking about the Council of Jewish Federations, which has expanded its budget enormously during the past 4 or 5 years. And whether there are lay people around who question any of this, who wonder whether this is a good path to open, I don't know. And the motivations of the lay people, of course, are something that's worth talking about. The larger, and here I don't want to be cynical at all, but it's easy to get caught up in as part of a large organization, because the larger the organization, the easier it is, in a sense, to accomplish, the more prestige there is attached to your participation, well, and so forth. So it's a very interesting business.
Well, we thank
but I,
you.
I don't want to appear cynical, because I'm not.
It's very good for you to think out loud.
What?
Paul. It's very valuable for you to think out loud. I think that's important. You're entitled to second thoughts about a lot of things.
Well, the Federation was, of course, when I first came here, the Federation was different. Of course, there was different all over the country. And it's true, I think, that the leadership probably was, I don't mean the lay leadership, the professional leadership. In some ways, the professionals, of course, today, I think, have a lot more power than they did then. In some ways, maybe even less. But Taylor, for instance, in this, matter of fact, I guess it would be fun to talk about the four executives.
Well,
Taylor, for example,
that we ought to save for another time. I think that would be, if you're willing, that would be, maybe we ought to do that one next time.
Do you think we should finish the half hour?
Would you like to? Are you?
No problem.
A good idea. Why don't you talk about the four executives then, since you brought that up?
Well, they are, of course, Taylor, although I knew quite well, I didn't have, of course, the kind of interaction with him that I had with the following three. Dr. Taylor came, Dr. Maurice Taylor became executive of the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies. I guess either right before or right around the time the United Jewish Fund was being organized, I guess he came around 1935. Before that, there had been a Dr. Ludwig Bernstein, who was really, I think, either always part-time or part-time up until the latter part of his career. If you look in the meeting room B, you'll see a little picture of Ludwig Bernstein. That's the only picture anybody could find of him. Nobody remembered that there had been such an individual until I pointed to that, and then they made a big search for his picture, and that was the picture they found. Him, I don't remember. But Dr. Taylor, of course, I talked about him when we talked about the services to the elderly and the disagreements between him on the one hand and the home for the aged lay people on the other. Dr. Taylor, first of all, was a very short man. I won't stress what that might have meant psychologically, but he was very short. He was a scholar and a student. He took himself very seriously. He was not easy to adjust to, I think, on the whole. Certainly, lay people found it difficult. The result was that as the years went by, his constituency, if I may use that term, kept narrowing, so that by the middle 50s, he really had a very small number of individuals who felt close to him. And the Federation itself, therefore, it was not yet the Federation, it was still the two organizations, the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies on the one hand, the Jewish Fund on the other. Both those organizations, lay-wise, had relatively limited leadership, because certainly the number one task, in many ways, of the executive is to see to it that you have an extremely high level, I can use that term, of leadership. By high level, if I phrase it differently, you should see to it that you have leadership which has great esteem, and it should be deep. By that I mean that there should be a lot of it. And he didn't really, about in the 50s, have either of those. Although he probably wouldn't have some trouble accepting this. What I meant before when I talked about efficiency and order were certainly not number one on his agenda. His agenda was theoretical, well, I'll put it differently. His agenda was theory and statistics. And the management of an organization, the smooth functioning of an organization dependent upon, among other things, dependent upon good relationships. These were not primary to his institutional outlook, at least. By that I mean to his outlook as to how the, as to what was important to the Federation. He did a population study back in 1937, a major study in which he apparently had exerted himself tremendously. He'd like to write certain kinds of things and so forth, he'd like to read, etc. But the focus on lay people as being crucial to the success of an organization, he wasn't able to either understand it or to carry it out. Bob Hiller was an altogether different cup of tea. Bob came to Pittsburgh in 1956. He was very young. He was in his early 30s. He came to Pittsburgh from Cleveland, where he had been campaign director. He was extremely tall, by the way, in contrast to Taylor, who had been so short. He was wise in some ways beyond his years. But when he came to Pittsburgh to be interviewed and so forth, there was some agreement that he was the right person for the job. He attached to his acceptance of the job as being executive director, and by the way, it would be executive director of the United Jewish Federation because the consolidation was already taking place. He attached to that the condition that what would have to be called the top formal leadership of the Jewish community would have to give him support for a few years until he was able to develop new leadership. By that I mean he exacted what might be called a commitment from Leon Falk, from Roy Reinstein, from Louis Kaplan. I don't know who else at this moment. There were four or five of them. It seems to me I'm missing a couple names. But anyway, he exacted, as I say, a commitment from those individuals that they would support him. The result was that Louis Reinstein, as I mentioned once before, I think in this session, became the first president of the Consolidated Federation. And more importantly, Louis Kaplan agreed to become the first elected president of the Federation. Louis Kaplan, at that stage of his life, he was already, probably may well have been in his early 70s, certainly in his late 60s. Nevertheless, at that stage of his life, was certainly a preeminent Jewish person who had already, I think, at that time been president of the American Jewish Committee nationally and so forth. Bob understood several things. Perhaps I shouldn't put it on the record, but he understood how to keep an eye on his own career. And I'm not saying that, I'm saying it judgmentally, but I'm not saying it critically. I've learned over the years that in organizational life, in business, in corporate activities, for all I know, maybe inside families, although there I would say differently, ambition is not necessarily a defect. Most of the time it's an asset, because it means that the individual really applies himself. The only time ambition becomes a problem is when there's a conflict of interest. But ambition normally is an asset. I often say to people, and it is relevant to this, although it's a little different, that when you employ people, particularly for this job, you don't necessarily ask as the first question, is he likable? You ask, is he effective? It's more important that a person be effective than that he be liked. What you want is somebody who is both. But the important thing is to have somebody who is effective. Bob was effective in terms of getting things done, in terms of moving people in, along. He was personally ambitious, but as I say, I'm not saying that at all critically. And above all else, he kept his eye on the need to induce lay people of stature, of resources, and so forth, to move into Federation and to become, so to speak, its leadership. And what did happen, as a matter of fact, is, and it had some consequences, he, in a sense, did stimulate a relatively young layer of, I guess, almost all businessmen, but a young layer of businessmen to become part of Federation. Lester Hamburg, Alvin Rogel, and individuals like that. And after Louis Kaplan and Herman Feinberg, who would sort of, Herman would have to be considered sort of transitional, I guess. After they had completed their presidencies, Lester was still quite young, became president. And the Federation under Bob did grow, and it did accrue to itself young leadership. Leonard Rudolph, for instance, is one of those. Jesse Cohn is one of those. I don't know about Sidney. I don't know when Sidney came in. Probably a little bit later. I think he's younger than Leonard, isn't he?
I believe so.
Probably younger. So Sidney was probably recruited somewhat later. But Bob did carry out an extremely important recruitment program. It was restricted, however, to what might be called the wealthy business individual. The Federation itself, as yet, was not sensitive to, well, I'll use the term, was not yet sensitive to Jewish continuity. Synagogues were outside the bounds, and Bob had very little feeling at that time, certainly, for Jewish academics, for Jewish scholarship, and so forth, which today has become a very important part of the Federation, and for which obviously I've been delighted and one of the things. As an individual to work with, Bob was not, well, for me at least, was very easy. It's been true of everybody I've worked with, so I'm on the whole, except maybe one is one exception. I always had a lot of freedom in my activity. Jerry Soroker, who's still around, was of course still a different kind of person. Jerry was not, interestingly enough, was not so ambitious to move up into a new position. Bob was. Bob was very young, and he was anxious to move up, which he did. He went to Baltimore, Eleanor. I think Sylvia knows that. He went to Baltimore, and then from Baltimore he went to the Council of Jewish Federations, and became, in many ways, perhaps one of the most important Jewish professionals in the country. Bob Hiller, that is. and he's always been recognized as being a very effective person. He planned ahead very well and so forth. Jerry never gave me the feeling, at least, of being ambitious in that sense of wanting to move up and so forth.
At what point did he come to
Jerry
head the generation?
Jerry came in 1965, after Bob had been here about 9 or 10 years. He, in his early years, certainly, he worked very, very hard. On the whole, Jerry, I think, had problems in developing relationships with all the different layers inside the Jewish community. As the years went by, this became more evident and became a real defect, or a limitation at least. He became very close to a certain group, but at a time when Federation was ready for expansion and for penetration into the Torah community, I think Jerry either didn't see it, I shouldn't say he didn't see it, he gave lip service to it, but he found it difficult to really implement it, both as a person and in terms of promoting programs. Jerry had trouble also accepting really Federation expansion. He wasn't used to what might be called larger salaries, to a larger staff and so forth, and found it difficult to accept the notion that this was going to be the norm. On top of that, he really didn't in some ways care as much, perhaps, as the years went by as he might have. So that there was a period there when, as far as I was concerned, at least as I think back over it now, Federation became static in terms of fundraising and in terms of expansion of lay personnel, of introduction of new elements of the community. I, of course, was responsible for what was called leadership development, but we always found that very difficult for several reasons to really accomplish. By the time that Jerry reached retirement age, which was about 6-7 years ago now, Federation, I think, was really very static. And some of the problems, unquestionably, stemmed from certain limitations within Jerry. My belief always has been, anyway, that for all organizations, the final flavor of the organization, the final effectiveness and so forth, does rest with the person who is what is called the number one executive. Jerry, of course, was replaced by Bill Kahn. Eleanor, Sylvia is familiar with Bill Kahn. Because when Bill Kahn came here, Sydney was president. And Bill was a very interesting fellow. I don't know whether Sylvia would agree with me or not on this, but well, I'm still trampling words in Sylvia's mouth, so will I worry about whether she'll agree or not. Just let me say that Bill Kahn was a man of great energy, of in many ways unusual vision or reach. By that I mean, when I use the word reach, I mean in terms of his desire to accomplish. He was also a man of great ambition, by the way, too. He was a man of ideas. He was a very difficult personality on occasion. I had my own problems with him, and Sydney had his problems with him. But on the whole, he did energize, I think that's the right word, Sylvia. He did energize the Pittsburgh Jewish community, or more precisely, the Federation. he did change the outlook of Federation. He did introduce much new lay personnel, some of them very good. He changed, by the way, whole scheme of personnel reimbursement and in some ways maybe even personnel status, although I'm not sure about that matter. He did